This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us in this hour three as we roll along on a Throwback Thursday. Today, Jack Nicklaus won the Masters in 1986. Tiger Woods won the Masters 1997. You got a bunch of them, like Mike Weir in 2003, Trevor Immelman in 2008. Yeah. George Archer, 1969. It was
Byron Nelson. That Byron Nelson won one.
Was it Byron Nelson in 1940?
Yeah.
Something. Let me see. I'm looking it up now. 1942. Jack Nicklaus in 75. Severino Ballesteros in 1980. And Bubba Watson in 2014. So those are your Masters champions on this particular date. So we are celebrating that with Masters songs. Masters of Puppets was the song we brought in. Pat Donovan in.
Okay. Yeah, you got to up the cool factor when it's
That's
Pat.
That's right, exactly. Very much up the cool factor when it's Pat. I like Pat. I always like Pat when he comes on the show. His goon squad, that's what he calls his fan base. It's
yeah.
Awesome down at WDAE. So
I know, they've got
– That's a good show down there.
They have sandwiches named after him.
I know.
It's just, God, you know what?
I know. Nobody's ever named a sandwich after us.
No.
Please get on that, people. And a beer? They have somebody brewed a beer in their honor too, the Goon Squad beer?
I know. Great. It's a little unfair.
It is unfair.
But you know, I mean,
is he the king of sports media down there?
I think he is, because remember they had an afternoon show and then earlier this year they got moved up.
Yeah.
So now they're the morning drive show.
That is a station, WDAE, is a station that had the legendary Steve Dumig, the late Steve Dumig on it. He was their afternoon guy, and he was a real powerful presence. He was the guy. Pat is there's a lot of people like Pat in Tampa media, which is like a guy that's like, oh, I grew up in Philadelphia and I moved down here, and I grew up here and I moved here. It's very transient. It's a place that you don't find a lot of locals, you know, like, and I don't mind locals. I have no problems with locals. The only thing, because I've moved around a lot, the only problem I have is they're sort of like people who've lived in one place their whole life. They have like, they hold on to something that they can't release, right? Like I live in a town, for example, that made the Saturn car, and people will post pictures of like downtown in like 1961, or like they'll post pictures from like 1985, and then they'll say like, man, it was so much better before. You know, it's like, I know it was I know we were less populated, like I get it, like it's like you're not going back to those days. Nobody's moving out now. It's like the plant's here, it's making cars, there's a lot of people moving here to work at that plant. It helps the economy. But there's always like Tampa doesn't really have that, because everybody seems to be from somewhere else. Everybody seems to be somewhere else. And so Dumig was from, again, this. He passed away a couple years ago, but he had this idea that I'm going to hold the Tampa Bay Buccaneers accountable. Like I'm going to, like any Northeastern type of broadcaster, I'm not going to just say, aren't we just blessed that we have an NFL team? I'm going to say, no, this is unacceptable. And when Tampa Bay was getting good in the late 90s, when they kind of surprised everybody in 97, where Trent Dilfer and Tony Dungy and Mike Allstott and Work Dunn and John Lynch and Warren Sapp and all the you know, when that team was really good and really strong, they were playing good football, and then they would lose. And he would go on the radio and he would say, that's unacceptable. Like, that loss is unacceptable. We're better than that team. They blew it with this call in the fourth quarter. They blew it with this offensive series in the, you know, late in the game, whatever. And people would call up all the time and they would go, Steve, we're just so lucky that we're able to have these games that matter in November. Look at where they've been. And he's like, nope, that's not what we're doing here. We're not going to sit back and go, oh, this is so new, we're good. Nope. Take this team to task. Take this team to task and say, hey, no. You've crossed over now. You're now a good football team. We're not accepting anything but excellence going forward. And he forced that. And it got to a point where people would love to listen on Mondays after the Buccaneers, because he would be like, yeah, sorry about this, but this team needs to get better. It's unacceptable. And it was really pulling – at both sort of ends of a fan base that was just so glad that there was a playoffs to talk about. And then the other side of, yeah, but what do you do when you've already convinced people you're good enough? Now what's the new standard? And it's a kind of a debate that we have in sports all the time. It's kind of a debate we have all the time. We do last in the first hour, we talked about when you are young and you root for a team, you take that team with you, right? You don't abandon them when they're bad. Like, that's your new team. And I got it into my kids. I mean, many of you got it into your kids. You go, that's your team now. And when you're older, I want you to still be rooting for that team because you take it with the good times and the bad. But when you are a fan of a fan base, maybe you pick up the local team that's not very good. When they get good, you have to raise the standard of your expectations. You can't be content with the idea that this is all gravy. I spent 10 years, 8 years, 6 years, whatever it is, of mediocre play. Maybe it's a lifetime that you've put up with play from your team that's not very good. And so going back to Tampa, right, taking that to the Rays, that was one of the questions I asked him at the end. When you're talking Diamondbacks and you're talking Tampa Bay Rays, these are two teams that came into the league in 1998. That was the first year that they existed. Now, the Rockies came in 93 and the Marlins came in 93. So now we're on the 30-year anniversary of the Rockies and the Marlins. And we're on the 25th anniversary or so, the 25th anniversary of the Rays and the Diamondbacks. That's enough time to have created a generation that only knows those teams and rooted for those teams since childhood. So if you grew up in Scottsdale, or you grew up in Mesa, or you grew up in Tampa, or you grew up in Clearwater, or you grew up in St. Petersburg, these are the only teams that you know. And now that you're older and you've got disposable income and you're on your own and you've maybe bought a house or got an apartment and have a job that you go to, you could put your dollars into that team now. You can go to the games, you can enjoy some beers with your buddies, and you can root for the team that you grew up with. Now, my wife, for example, grew up in St. Petersburg when they didn't have the Tampa Bay Rays. She remembers when the Lightning came into existence in the, I want to say, late 80s, early 90s. But the Rays were not a team she grew up liking. Now, she wasn't a huge sports fan, but when I knew her, and I said, when I was dating her, I said, she knew what I did for a living. And I said, who do you like for baseball? She said the Atlanta Braves. If you go around, you might find some people who like the Yankees because their spring training facility, George Steinbrenner, had the Yankees in Tampa. They used to be in South Florida, but then they moved to Tampa. You have a bunch of people from Chicago. You have a bunch of people from Philadelphia, Boston. It's a retirement type of location. But now there is a generation that is rooting for these teams. And like Pat Donovan said in hour two, for 15 years, the Rays have been decent. The Rays have been decent. They were in the World Series in 2009 against the Philadelphia Phillies. They went to the World Series not that long ago against the Dodgers in 2020. They've been around the playoff picture. They've been in the postseason. They've given the Yankees and the Astros fits in the postseason. So they may not have beaten those teams, but they've given them fits. Sometimes they do beat those teams. So there is, this team has found its, they have found something that works. They have found something that, whatever it is, whether Yonder Franco coming up, you know, He-Man Choi leaves and goes to the Pirates. They replace him, right? And Evan Longoria was the face of the franchise forever. He's gone. They don't miss a beat. Right? Blake Snell was a pitcher. He's gone. They don't miss a beat. They have guys. David Price pitched for them. Chris Archer pitched for them. Doesn't matter. They've got Drew Rasmussen. They've got Jeffrey Springs. They, like you said, they used the opener. Right? Joe Maddon was their manager. He's gone. They bring in Kevin Cash, who made a bad decision on Blake Snell, but consistently this team is a 90-plus
He made
team.
A great decision on
he
Blake
made
Snell.
A great decision. Yeah, right.
I love his decision.
So,
it is amazing about this team. I mean, 15 years they have been good and don't really have anything to show for it.
So
I mean,
again, that's my big question. So you're combining a young generation now, and you don't even have to have been born, right, when they came into existence. You could be 6 when they came into existence, 5 when they came in. That would mean you're 30, right? That means you might have kids of your own that you're taking them to Rays games, right? You could have been 7 and not have found baseball yet until the Rays came into existence. Your first baseball game with your dad might have been at Tropicana Field, and now you've got a home in Clearwater and 2 kids, and you're taking them down there. There's something else that's going on than there's a bunch of people here from other places. Winning is contagious, and there is a little hometown. I've lived in Nashville for 10 years. I follow the Preds. I couldn't name 2 players on the Nashville Predators before I moved here. Right? Right now they got a statue of Pecorine out front, and I go, I remember him. I've watched him play. Like Mike Fisher, all those. I know. I follow them close enough. It's just a team. It's in my town. If somebody offered me Preds tickets, I wouldn't go, well, I didn't root for them growing up, so no. I'd go, yeah, sure. Why 12,000 people to see a 12-0 baseball team? They can't get 50% capacity. There's something deeper that's going on, and it's interesting. And I think if you're the Rays, you really got to figure out what the answer is. Because, again, a 12-0 start in a lot of other cities in America would be producing sellout crowds this early in the season.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, DJ Ron Culver, who is this and what's the name of the song?
Well, this song is called Masterpiece.
Masterpiece by...
It's actually my masterpiece, I'm sorry. By South Carolina's own Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker, I was going to say, that sounds a little Darius Rucker. But I didn't want to say that because I didn't know for sure. But well done, Darius Rucker. Darius Rucker, Hootie and the Blowfish, and then became a country singer.
Yep.
Said, I'm breaking away, and I know where the bread is buttered, and I'm going to go break.
Country was always in his heart.
Always in his heart, and you only have one life. There's nothing worse than not fulfilling your freaking goals, even if it
could he do a
hearts.
Hootie reunion now? Could he go back?
Is his relationship with the other Blowfish? Are they strong?
I think they're good. I think they're all good.
It wasn't bad.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I guess I could.
Man, I haven't heard the Blowfish move on to anybody else.
Yeah, I didn't hear them going on to other things, right? So, can we do a fun kicker story? Because we'll go back to the Packers and the Jets, but I know I'm going to forget this story. And I saw it this morning, and I thought Ron actually might find this amusing. Maybe you won't find this amusing. Maybe you'll actually not like this story at all. I can't speak for you. But Matthew McConaughey thinks him and Woody Harrelson might actually be brothers. Now, they get along. They're really good friends.
Right, yeah.
Matthew McConaughey was on a podcast with Kelly Ripa, and he mentioned that he has this unbelievable friendship with Woody Harrelson. They starred in a TV show, True Detective.
Yep.
He said that my kids call him Uncle Woody. His kids call me Uncle Matthew. But he added a flavor as to why they actually might be related. So you know Woody Harrelson's dad, right? He was like a criminal, and there is even belief by some that he was part of the JFK conspiracy.
Right, yeah.
Remember that? So, and Matthew McConaughey's father, if you don't know his story, how else do I put it? He actually died of a heart attack having sex with Matthew McConaughey's mother. But they had been divorced a couple of times. Big Jim is what Matthew McConaughey tells that story. Nevertheless, on the podcast, he said that one time they were in Greece together, the whole families, everybody in the families was in Greece, including Matthew McConaughey's mother. And while they were having a conversation, his mother said to Woody Harrelson, said, hey, by the way, I knew your father. So he goes, we were in Greece a few years ago sitting around talking about how close we are and our families. And my mom is there and she says, Woody, I knew your dad. Everyone was aware of the eclipses that my mom left after new. It was a loaded new. So it wasn't like, oh, I knew your dad. Like, I knew your dad. Wink, wink.
Like in the biblical sense.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Like in the biblical sense. Great point. Great. Yes, great. So they, so can you, all right, so they get this feeling from Matthew McConaughey's mother that, all right, maybe she did know Woody Harrelson's father based on the way she said it. And they start to unpack this, and they found out that Woody Harrelson's dad was on furlough at the time that the that his mom and dad were divorced. So they're figuring Woody Harrelson's age and the point of, I know this is going to be weird, point of conception. And they figure at that timeline that, yep, Matthew McConaughey's mother was divorced and Woody Harrelson's dad was not in prison. And they were around the same area in East Texas. So they, so she said, take a DNA test. And he, Matthew McConaughey said no.
I'm with it, man. You know what? Why not?
Take the DNA test.
Yeah. I guess they probably don't want to find out that they're not. Remain that way. I mean,
do you remember the TV show My Two Dads?
Yes.
Dick Butkus was in My Two Dads. Paul Reisner was in it.
Yeah, and Greg something.
Yes, yes. If you don't know this, it was an 80s sitcom. And the basically the
Stacey
premise,
Keebler.
Stacey Keebler.
Stacey something.
Stacey something. The premise of the TV show back in the day, I don't think it lasted that long on TV. The premise was these two guys were roommates, they were best friends, but they both had the same girlfriend. And one day a young girl shows up, adoption agency brings up, one of them is the dad.
Right.
But they don't know who it is. And so they both take care of this young girl. That's why it's called My Two Dads. She doesn't know which one's the dad. But they had one episode where she takes a test. They have an argument, a fight. Well, then who is the real father? She takes a test. She's begging not to take the test. She likes the situation. She loves them both. She doesn't want to know who the real dad is. But both the dads are fighting. And I think the way that the show was, they had it. They didn't open it. They threw it in the fire. Like, that's the only way I could think of with Matthew McConaughey. Like, does he really want to know if Woody Harrelson is his brother? But wouldn't Matthew McConaughey's mother know if she gave birth to Woody Harrelson?
I mean, that's a good point.
Right? Or, like it's not the other way around. It's not the dad.
No, it's like the dad, you know, planted his seed someplace else.
Right? Exactly.
I mean, yeah, if it's through the mom, I think she would remember unless,
right?
You know, unless drug use goes up the ladder.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we all know about Woody and Matthew McConaughey are close. They're bud buddies, too.
Right, right. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are very much so. Now, if it was true, wouldn't the universe be kind of weird? Like, you just end up. Like, you see these stories on, like, That's Incredible or something. You're like, how in the world did the universe come to connect? They could have been two actors going in totally different directions. Oh, yeah, we worked on a project once. He was pretty cool. We liked him, but, you know, I don't know him that well. But, no, they're, like, best friends. So, anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of that story. Because Matthew McConaughey is one of those guys that is, he's got charisma. It's, you know what I mean? Like I like hearing him talk. I like him telling stories. I like it when Matthew McConaughey does interviews. He seems like a nice guy. I don't know if he's a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy.
Everything I've seen him in, he seems genuine.
He seems genuine.
Now, we see him a lot more here. I mean, there was even moments where he was going to run for the governor of Texas.
Was he?
Yeah. There was talks about it. I don't think he went all the way through. He might revisit it down the road.
He did talk on the podcast about being in a plane that dropped 4,000 feet. Have you ever been in a plane that plummets like that?
No.
I've never, and I don't
know. I've been in planes, like, you know, if you ever land in San Diego, San Diego's airport, the Lindbergh Field.
Yeah.
The landing route takes you over, like, downtown San Diego. And so you're flying over the San Diego Zoo, and there's mountains right there. And then you do have to drop pretty quickly. It's not 4,000 feet, but you do drop a lot more rapidly than you do like at most other airports where you can kind of slowly, gradual get in. And that was one thing I always remember flying into San Diego, but it's not – yeah, I couldn't do 4,000 feet.
It's not like being at 30,000 feet and plummeting to 20,000 feet.
Right.
And you're like, oh, my God, I thought we were going to crash.
Yeah.
It's a scary thing, man. I've been on flights where I always watch the flight attendants. I think I told you this before.
Yeah.
I always watch
flight attendants. No, which is smart. I mean, that's actually great advice to anyone who has a moderate fear of flying.
If you're on a plane and they're serving drinks and you run into turbulence, if they're still serving drinks, don't worry about it. They know.
They know
when they got to go. We're done. Like, we're going to go sit down now. We're done. They know. So watch them. If they're cool and collected, that's their job, too. They're trying to make sure that nobody goes crazy. But they do have they have their own safety to be concerned with. So I always watch them whenever a flight gets a little bumpy, okay, all right, I don't like this. I don't know what's going on. But if I see them going like, peanuts, yeah, Coke, Diet Coke, here you go. And they're still doing that, I go, all right, we're good. But whenever I hear, flight attendants, please fasten your seatbelt. I go, oh God, what's going to happen now? And then I like.
And then I don't know if you've ever, the comedian Bill Engvall.
Oh, I've heard of him.
He's, you know, he's one of those he's one of the blue collar comedy tour guys. But he always told he had this one joke that, and I to this day I do the same thing, is that you know when you know if you're in an airplane and you hit some turbulence, the first thing you do is you look out the window.
I know.
Like I mean, always. And he's like, what do you think? You hit a dog at 36,000 feet?
Exactly. Great point.
But
like, what do we hit?
But it's so true. It's like you run into a little turbulence. You look out the window like, oh, where are we? What do we do?
Yeah,
hoping
exactly.
to see like invisible what? I don't know.
Like, whoops, my bad. Sorry. I was jaywalking over here. Sorry about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Didn't mean to have you slam the brakes.
Damn pothole.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. We do look out the window. That is so true.
I always look out the window. I don't know why.
Is it? Yeah. And that's because I wouldn't want to look out the window and see a mountain and just be like,
right.
Oh my God,
A mountain or see a plane falling. It's on fire.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Did we do that?
Stacy Keach is the name of the,
no, not Keach. I looked it up. It's Keenan.
Keenan?
Stacy Keach is a British actor.
I was going to say, wasn't Stacy Keach in...
He's a man, by the
he's
way.
He's a man, right?
Yeah, but Stacy Keenan.
I like Stacy Keebler. I like the idea of Legs Keebler being a
being
on
my two dads.
Dads in the
1980s. Yeah, just because you want to be one of her dads.
Yeah, right, because Stacy Keebler is still Stacy Keebler.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I thought Philip, who likes wrestling, knows wrestling, would like the Stacy Keebler reference. We continue.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
So if you haven't been following our Throwback Thursday today, we're doing shows with the word Masters in it because today is a big day for the Masters golf tournament. It's a big anniversary. 86, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods in 97. Who's this?
I told you right before it came on.
Yes,
what did I say to you?
You said, I apologize for this song.
Yeah.
Is this Debbie Gibson?
No.
I don't think
I would apologize for...
Is it Miley Cyrus?
I wouldn't apologize for Debbie.
Is it Tiffany?
No.
Is it Alanis Morissette?
I mean, you're naming the right type
Swift?
Of girls. It's Taylor Swift.
Is it Taylor Swift?
Yep.
See, there's not much I don't know Taylor Swift as I couldn't recognize her immediately.
Yeah, this is the song Mastermind.
Oh, Mastermind, Taylor Swift. She writes her own stuff, right?
She does.
Okay. No, I give her credit.
And she gets interrupted accepting awards from Kanye.
Yeah, exactly.
How old is that reference, by the way?
That's old.
There's probably people listening like, dude, come on. You can't keep bringing that up.
Just can't. Yeah, exactly.
She's been interrupted by so many other people.
More by than that. She's not that anymore. Exactly. That happens in sports occasionally where a player like 2 or 3 years in his career makes a mistake, like drops a pass in the end zone.
Right.
And they go on to become a Pro Bowl wide receiver or a pitcher who gives up a big home run in the World Series, but they become a Cy Young Award winner. And people continue to bring that up like, dude, I've won championships and awards. Like, you're going to remind me of what I did when I was 22 years old?
How many athletes do get that, though?
Yeah.
Like, if I say this name, I'm going to say one name to you. I want you to tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay, yeah.
Robin Ventura.
Yeah, punching, getting punched by Nolan Ryan.
Right.
The guy had a the guy had like a 60-game hitting streak in college.
He was
at Oklahoma State.
He was a great player.
Exactly.
Except
you're right.
We all just remember him in a headlock.
You are 100% right. Bill Buckner. Bill Buckner is another perfect example. Had a good career. Remembered for the ball through his legs. That's what happened.
That's it.
Now, I think you and I could be rightfully barbecued by the music industry if the only thing we can think about with Taylor Swift is her getting interrupted by Kanye West. I think there are music executives going, holy cow, is that the only thing that you think about when you think Taylor Swift?
Let these guys know she had a huge Ticketmaster debacle last year.
Could you let them know she's kind of successful, sports geeks? They don't even really. Could you let her know she's sold a couple of records? Yeah, I get it.
But all she does is all she do is write songs about ex lovers?
Yeah, right.
That's it, right?
She's still dating John Mayer. I don't know. Yeah, I know.
Should she give credit to John Mayer for making her career so successful?
I am telling you right now.
Or any of the other guys that she dated, because I can't even name any of them.
In my career, do you know how many music DJs in my career have poked fun at me for my lack of knowledge on certain people? I have mispronounced names of famous artists. I have misidentified who sings a song that's number one on the charts.
But it's okay for music, right?
I tell them that all the time. Can you name the top five NBA scorers right now? No, I can't name who's on the Billboard Top 100. And since Casey Kasem's no longer doing it, I don't listen. Put a good old Casey Kasem. My favorite thing on Sundays is there's a station here in Nashville that runs the old Casey Kasem countdown show. The old, we're going to the top 10 of 1975. I love that.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I love it. Because
kind of what we do on this show.
Because to me, here's why. And again, I just complained about people holding on to the past and not expanding. But to me, it's I never want to go back to a world in sports where I have to look up a box score that night in the paper or the next morning in the paper, right? Where it's too late. I want to look at the Laker game now, right? I want to see the Laker game as it's going. I don't want to wait for the paper to get the box score like we used to. But when Casey Kasem did America's Top 40, that was the only way you could know what the number one song in the country was. There was no other method.
No, there was one other way.
You had to get the magazine.
Well, no, I was going to say you had to be physically in a music store.
That's right.
Because a lot of times they would have it posted of what the top 10 songs are at that moment.
Now, they did have the magazine, right? The Billboard magazine had it. But that was really the only way.
And I think Rolling Stone usually had something
Rolling
in
Stone
it, too.
Had it, yeah. That was really the only way to find out what the number one song in the country was. Listen to Casey Kasem's Top 4.
Yep.
That was it. Now you know. Some people don't even care. You know,
it's gotten to the point now. I don't care who the number one song is.
I remember when Ebony and Ivory, Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney was number one forever, and I would listen to see who would knock it off the number one perch. That was crazy. So that's when, you know, you and I.
So I'm looking it up right now. What the number one song in America is
right now?
Right now. You ready?
I bet I do not know this song. Go ahead.
I don't know the song. I know the artist. Okay, I know you know the artist.
Who's the artist?
The artist is Morgan Wallen.
Oh, Morgan Wallen's got the number one song?
Number one. Billboard, the Billboard Hot 100, the number one song right now is Last Night.
Oh, my goodness. There you go. There you go. So we providing the answers.
Yeah.
So, but.
And then the number two song is called Kill Bill by SZA?
No idea who that is.
SZA? ZZA?
Yeah.
ZZA?
Your guess is as good as mine.
That's how you say it, right? ZZA?
Is that it? Your guess is as good as
mine. There's someone who is just mocking us at no end right now.
Of course, that's what happened with me.
I can't believe they just called him ZZA.
That's what happened to me.
But that's the way names are spelled right now. You look at this name, and it's literally all capital letters, SZA. And somebody will come at you and go, oh, my God. You know, that is Shawshank. That's how you say that.
Yeah, and you go, no, it is?
How do you get – that's za.
Yeah, exactly. Philip on Twitter, got in late on that, on the Stacey Keach thing. But definitely appreciate Stacey Keebler note. I think she's aged backwards. Has she?
Phillip, I think she has.
Has she? I don't want to. I do not want to Google that.
She took a break.
Are you
from
kidding?
Wrestling, right? She took a break from wrestling.
I'm assuming she did.
She had three kids.
Did she?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
God bless her husband.
You know, I got to be honest with you. My infatuation with Stacey Keibler is probably 20 years old. So you're probably right. So it's been a while. So yeah. Okay. So I don't even want to Google the 2023 version of Stacey Keibler. Can I just keep it in my head?
No,
she was 20 years ago?
No, you probably should. Maybe not now.
Okay, not now?
Maybe during the break.
Don't do it now?
Maybe during the break. Come back.
Really?
Well, I'll find you this article she did with People magazine.
Will I be sad?
You're not going to be sad.
Okay.
That's for dang sure. I mean, you might be sad when you look at her husband and go, really, that's it?
Really? Okay.
But right. there was one photo in particular where she's walking a pathway out in the jungle.
Oh, okay,
out in the
wait
country.
A minute. So this means she's looks good.
Yes.
Today. Oh, I thought it meant okay.
I think she does.
Okay,
I don't know what Phillip is getting
at. Hold on. Phillip said she's I'm rethinking this. He says she thinks she's aged backwards. That's like Benjamin Button. So what
yes.
he's saying is she may be 50. But she probably looks 25. Okay, I get it now.
She's not.
My bad.
She has not lost it. I mean, it's like, you know, Christie Brinkley. It's like Elizabeth Hurley. I mean, you know, Heidi Klum. All these older models that just still, like, you know, defying time.
I thought it was one of those things where you see a picture and then they go, you'll never believe what Sports Illustrated supermodel Elle McPherson looks like. And you're like, what? Oh, no.
No. These are photos you.
These
that's
are good.
Yeah, these are photos you want to look later. Not okay. right. Not now.
I got you. I got you. All right. Hey, listen, Phillip, thank you. All right, thank you. Google her WWE Hall of Fame pictures from WrestleMania last weekend. Oh, she's in the Hall of Fame? Even
yeah, she
better.
Got into the – you know what? I'm going to do that.
That's even better, Phillip. Thanks. Stacey Keibler's in the Hall of Fame. I didn't even know that. How could I call myself a fan if I didn't even know that? I don't even know why I'm a fan. So, the NFL, by the way, 2 weeks from now is the NFL draft. Are we ready for the NFL draft? Has everybody got their mock drafts out now?
I don't think so.
Is Todd McShay and Mel Kiper and whoever else? Who else is in the business? Is there anybody else?
Todd McShay, Rob Rang, Dane Brugler.
Dane Brugler. I was just looking through his beast at The Athletic. It's a amazing comprehensive.
That's really it, right?
I was going to say, are those the four horsemen of the apocalypse of the NFL mock drafts?
Yeah, I mean, there's our guy, Emory Hunt, but...
Emory Hunt, yeah.
You know, he...
I would say, though, those are the Mount Rushmore.
That could be the Mount... You know what, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted because I did
Stop
decide
looking
to,
at Stacey Keibler
I decided
pictures.
To Google Stacey Keibler Hall of Fame picks, and you know what, I mean, I'm having a good time.
I'm not going to do that. I am not going to do that until the break. I will not do that to the break. I'm trying to distract you with Will Levis conversation. It doesn't seem to be working.
Well, it's Levi's.
Yeah, it's Levi's. Hey, by the way, if my music friend said to me, hey, what do you think of Will Levi's? Do you think I would make fun of them? No, I would. I would.
Yeah, you would.
I would. Of course I would.
And you'd make fun of Will.
If I get an artist, a music artist wrong in the pronunciation and you come at me with Will Levi's, I'm gonna take my revenge.
Do it.
On that. Absolutely. All right, we'll come back. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. On the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Yeah, we're taking it back to the 1980s on Throwback Thursday. You did a good job with these songs today.
Do you remember this song?
I know it, but I don't know the name of it.
Yeah, it's called this one's called Masterpiece as well.
How many of these Masterpiece songs were made?
I don't know.
A bunch of them?
But they're all different.
Yeah,
I mean, there was one that was Masterpiece by the Temptations that I left off.
Remember,
but this is Atlantic Star.
We're gonna slow things down a little bit. Grab your favorite girl. 1986. under the sea dance.
Oh, this is the slow skate.
Yeah, exactly.
The slow skate around the rink.
That's right. That's right. Oh, goodness. Cheesy 80s music. Goodness. Nevertheless. We were talking 2 weeks is the NFL draft. It's going to be in Kansas City. I feel like every year these things get great and big and bigger. But I was kind of thinking.
And Kansas City's going to set it back?
I think Kansas City could.
It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah. Where was it? Was in Las Vegas last year?
Yes.
My mind gets all blurry. So,
well, I mean, it's hard to keep track of the drafts.
Okay, so 2019 was Nashville. 2020, was that in Cleveland? Where we were doing the COVID draft?
Or is that
we didn't have a place in 2020.
Roger Goodell's home. His basement.
Stupid me. Why would I think we would hold a draft in April, a month after we shut everything down?
We invited everybody.
I'm a dummy. No, that draft was spooky scary, wasn't it?
Well, that was the one where it's a lot more fun now when you watch it because you can see Roger getting a little more tipsier.
A little tipsy. He's like, I can't do this anymore. Oh, God.
I'm in my basement. This is, honey, it's my drinking hour.
What a weird draft that was. But then 2021 was Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, right? Am I thinking the right thing? 2021 was Cleveland?
Because it should have went then, right to Vegas because 2020 is supposed to be Vegas.
Vegas, and then last year, Vegas. I think that's where it was. Then Vegas. But Vegas, the Vegas draft wasn't a lot of complaints about the Vegas draft. It wasn't what people thought. They thought it was a little off. They thought it was going to be in certain areas. It wasn't. But the Nashville one here in my town was great. I remember that. That was really exciting. Drafts are fun. I'm glad they take it on the road. It's always good. It's like a convention of fans.
Right.
It's like when people like tell me they go to Comic-Con. Like my sister's gone to a couple of Comic-Con conventions, and I always go, that's kind of cool. Like, hey, let's go over to the panel of Star Trek 9, and they go over there, or let's go to the Marvel thing, and let's go see Dungeons and Dragons and all that stuff, and that's always cool. And the NFL draft has become a place where fans can go and they can mingle with people of like mind, right? I can be a Steelers fan, and I can fly into Kansas City, and I can find my group. I can find the Steelers, and we can have a good time, and we can talk about previous drafts, and we can cheer or boo based on who the Steelers take. Like it's a fun time. And I think the people at the NFL who noticed for years and years and years that this thing was getting really popular, because you would have a line outside like Radio City Music Hall for people to get into the draft.
Right.
And they started noticing, like, people are into this.
People want to show up.
Like, people like ESPN broadcasting it on TV is, okay, it's what are you going to, put it on TV, that's fine. It's a big deal. College football is a big deal. NFL is a big deal. Show people who the drafts are. But, and then there was always, you would always have people at the local team. If you covered the Patriots, you would be in Foxborough to get the interviews with the coaches and people who made the decisions. But what they started noticing were people were coming in from all across the country into New York trying to get into the show, right? You know, everybody remembers the Boo It, the Jets fans
of
would
course.
Always be there. That sort of became a life of its own. And then they started to realize, we could do this in other cities, and I wonder what it would look like. Where would we go with this? And when they did, it became an amazing show.
You know what it does too. And this is probably one of the more important things because I'm looking at future sites for the draft. This allows the opportunity for a cold weather city to host something.
Exactly.
NFL.
That's a great point.
Because
a big marquee thing that involves the entire NFL, not splitting it with another city on championship
Minnesota
Sunday.
Will get another Super Bowl. Detroit's going to get another Super Bowl.
Right.
Green Bay will never get a Super Bowl.
Right. Now,
but
wouldn't it be fun to have the draft in Green Bay? Are they planning to go to Green Bay?
They did.
Did they?
Yeah. This year's 2023 draft is in Kansas City.
Kansas City.
The 2024 draft, we already know the location of that. That's Detroit, Michigan.
Right.
And Detroit was chosen ahead of Washington, D.C. and Green Bay.
So they're already considering Green.
Green Bay is putting their hat into the ring of saying, hey, we want to host a Super Bowl or host the NFL draft.
I can't wait for that.
I mean, Buffalo could host an NFL draft. I mean,
is that like Sturgis for Bike Week? Like, is that like where a small town just gets filled with people from everywhere around the country?
Yes.
Like the local Green Bay diner can't make enough burgers to satisfy
the
hordes of people that are going to arrive.
NFL, you can't have it in neighboring Milwaukee.
No.
You have to have it in Green Bay.
Figure it out. People will sleep in their cars. They will stay in Milwaukee and drive up.
Yep.
Make sure there's Lambeau Field in the background. I don't care what you have to do, but
I don't know the
layout of outer Green Bay, but there's got to be a way you can do this.
You have it at the Green Bay Convention Center, Hair Salon, Tire Center.
Yeah, right.
Because you know it's all combined.
Right, do that. That would be fantastic.
I think that'll happen. Seattle would be a great town to host an NFL draft because I don't think they would ever get a Super Bowl.
This is going to be like Woodstock, right? This is gonna be like one road in, one road out kind of thing, right?
How small have we made Green Bay?
I'm already in love with this idea. I am in love with this idea. Like, seriously, everybody, every fan base from around the NFL making a pilgrimage to Green Bay, Wisconsin for the NFL draft in late April? Sign me up 1,000 times for that. I'm going myself. Are you kidding me? I need to see this in person.
Oh, I would definitely
People
go.
People sleeping by lampposts. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I think we would have to go. We would have to road trip.
It's, again, think of things that, like, in small... Like, this small town is – and Green Bay is not a small town, but it's the smallest market in the NFL. But think of, like, these places that host these gigantic things where you're like, how do they pull that off? That's a
You know what I love? Because what you're describing right now?
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to have this music in the background as you're traveling to, right?
Yeah.
This is Green Bay's draft theme song.
I would do a whole mock – people with no shirts going, yeah!
Cheeseheads.
Number 3 pick overall! Yeah!
All you would see is a bunch of number 4 jerseys and number 12 green jerseys just walking.
Exactly.
Because I think you would have Packer fans from all over the country descending.
Oh, exactly. Oh, my God. That would be great.
But it's the idea that I love is that, you know, there are these cold weather cities that unless you have a dome, you're never going to host a Super Bowl. New York, I mean, I think New York was great, but I think it also ruined the chances of any other cold weather city to ever host a Super Bowl.
You could have Roger Goodell on the stage. Don't take the brown acid. No, brown acid isn't good for you. Oh, my God. You could totally do the whole thing around Woodstock if you go to Green Bay, Wisconsin. That would be great. Fantastic. No water, no food, mud.
All you got to do is put McFarland in charge of it, right?
That's right.
What's his first name? Billy?
Billy McFarland run it?
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's there to see where Arch Manning is going to go in the draft.
God, could that be it?
Yeah. Oh, my God. It could be in a couple of years.
Yeah. I mean, because I don't know. We don't know 2025 yet.
Right.
So what if... What if they hold off and go, you know, we're going to wait till 2026?
I am totally catching a wave of enthusiasm for the Woodstock Green Bay draft show.
I know you're already
Wisconsin.
You're done with Kansas City. You know, you don't even care about Detroit next year.
Right. 20 years later, we could have documentaries of people going, we were just a bunch of 18-year-old kids. We didn't know what we were doing. We just decided to head on up to Green Bay, Wisconsin. We didn't even know where it was. We were pulling for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We just wanted to see who they're drafting. We didn't even know where we were going to sleep, where we were going to eat, what we were going to do. We didn't have any money. We just wanted to see who the picks were.
It was a calling.
We just felt it. It got a bunch of people together. We said, would the car even make it? We didn't even know. We just started driving and said, God be with us as we go see the first round pick for our beloved Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the rest is history. Unbelievable. That would be great. NFL, make this happen, please. Please make this happen in the future. Draft in 2 weeks.